Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Mini Break, your daily podcast where we dig the storylines, results, and controversies from the tennis world. Today is Friday, January 8th. Of course, if you listened to the earlier episode of today's Mini Break podcast, you know we are well aware it is actually Tuesday, January 12th. To reiterate what I said in our earlier episode, to help catch all of you listeners up with all of the action that has happened throughout the first week of the professional tennis season, we are recapping each day's play individually here on the Mini Break podcast. We're bringing back one of our favorite segments, our changeover chats, to allow me to talk about my favorite matches from each of the day. The players that have stood out in both positive and negative ways. Since you already heard the format on the earlier podcast, I will also just quickly state one more time the reason we are able to do this day in, day out. Of course, because of the support we get from all of you listeners, from our fantastic Patreon family, and of course, from our friends over at Midwest Sports. If you have any needs for your own tennis equipment, for your own game, go check out our friends at Midwest Sports. They've got all the best brands, all the best prices. You use our promo code CR15. Not only will you let them know we sent you there, you'll also get 15% off your order, free two-day shipping on all orders exceeding $75. Best of all, you'll get a free can of Wilson Extra Duty Tennis Balls, MidwestSports.com. The promo code is CR15. Okay, I want to once again start this episode in Abu Dhabi because, and I will do more research for all of you later in the week, I can't imagine we have ever had an opening event of the WTA season feature this loaded of a draw. I mean, you have what, I think it's like 12 top 25 players in the world were all in the draw to start the event. Now, of course, there have been off-court things that have happened, a couple of players testing positive for COVID-19, how that impacts not only this tournament, but of course, what we see in Australia is something we will talk about later in the week and much more frequently in the build-up as we get closer to the 2021 Australian Open. But of course, we have seen so many fantastic performances that I've talked about already on this Mini Break podcast, and I hate to beat a dead horse here because you've heard from her repeatedly in our From the Presser podcast on our Cracked Interviews podcast feed. Excuse me. You've heard me talk about her so frequently down the home stretch of the 2020 season. That's because she didn't lose in her last two events, and she hasn't lost yet to kick off this 2021 season. The match I want to start with is a breakdown of Aryna Sabalenka against Alia Tomljanovic. And look, I want to talk about Tomljanovic as well because I was surprised at how impressed I was by Alia Tomljanovic. I really haven't watched that much of her throughout her pro career, and I know she's broken the top 50, been, I believe, top 40 in singles before, and I know she's pretty solid, but for me, there's just never really a reason to watch her, although, you know, again, I'll get back to what impressed me about her game in a little bit, but it's time to talk about Aryna Sabalenka and why this is the season she needs to win, and I think she will win a Grand Slam. And there just something seems to have clicked for every aspect of her game, and it really happened in that Ostrava quarterfinal. She was down 6-0-4-0 to Sara Cerebes Tormo. If you remember, she comes back to win that match 0-6, 6-4, 6-love, 12 straight games. From there, she drops only one set throughout the rest of the season and earns titles in Ostrava and Linz. Now, you look at the wins she got along the way. She beat Coco Gauff, Jen Brady, Vika Azarenka, Elisa Mertens, Barbara Krejcikova, all phenomenal victories for Sabalenka on the indoor hard courts. And I mean, she has started off her 2021 season with a bang as well. You know, thus far, where we're talking in the tournament, she beats Polona Herzog straight sets in the round of 64, now knocks off Alia Tomljanovic 7-5, 6-4 on Friday, and it only gets better from here, folks. But she just possesses that sort of view power that it doesn't really matter what her opponents are doing. And I don't know how else to describe it, because it's just sort of, if you're hitting against someone, and I hate saying this because, and thankfully he doesn't actually listen to the podcast anymore, because, you know, I think he's a little salty that he doesn't come on as much as he would like. But, you know, my doubles partner in college, and not to compare Aryna Sabalenka, who has world-class power, to Max Rothman, but in the club tennis world, Max Rothman had world-class power, and there are times you don't even want to hit with him because you're just like, man, you, like, who is this fun for? Like, are you enjoying your slap down the line? Like, yeah, guess what, if you make that forehand, you win the point, but we're just here to sweat, we're not going pro. The point is, Aryna Sabalenka is a pro, and she's got the sort of power that it doesn't really matter what her opponents do. If she's clicking, she's winning the match. And obviously we're frustrated because we haven't seen her make that deep, you know, semi-final, final run yet at a major in singles, although it's always worth pointing out she has won a major title in doubles, and she's got a lot of major titles on her resume as well, right? Was a Wuhan champion, Shenzhen champion, a Shuhai champion, Doha champion at the beginning of last season as well, and then the two wins in Ostrava and Linz. She's number 10 to enter this season, and, you know, now she's on what? You look across, coming out of Friday, she's on an 11-match win streak, after her Friday win over Tomjanovic. And it's just, you know, what she's done so well over the course of these matches is she's averaging about a 71-72% win percentage on her first serves, and that's an elite number. That's the best of the best. If you're winning 70% of your first serve points, you're going to hold serve a lot of the time, particularly when you're making about 60% of your first serves on average during these matches. And, you know, that's a low-hanging fruit, right? If she can get that number to 64-65%, it will do wonders for just how much easier her matches will become. And against Tomjanovic, you know, her first serve percentage in this match for Sabalenka wasn't outstanding. She was at 67% during the match, but that's where you want to be. That's solid for her. She wins 61% of her first serve points, only 48% of her second serve points, but she holds Tomjanovic to 9 of 24 on the Tomjanovic second serve. And, you know, when I talk about that FU power, there's a just, I always turn to Andrei Rublev as the male example. There's just a ferociousness in every Aryna Sabalenka swing. She's looking to hit the cover off the ball. She's looking to take control of the rally. Of course, she's a doubles Grand Slam champion. I mentioned that again because she's really proficient moving forward to the net. She's a really powerful north-south mover. I think an elite north-south mover getting from the baseline to the net. Now, laterally, I think she's also very good considering the power she has, considering she doesn't have, you know, the typical, I hate to, you know, she's not the short's the wrong word, but she's not a Barty Halep body type. She's more the Serena sort of power athlete, and yet that power, I don't think she sacrifices much fluidity. She just checks off so many boxes, and when she's clicking, like she has been in her last three events, the talent is just so evident. And what, to get back to Alia Tomjanovic, what was so impressive in this victory for Sabalenka, she made this 7-5, 6-4 victory look kind of routine, despite trailing at times. You know, Tomjanovic, it's Garbi and Muguruza light. You know, I think Tomjanovic now, and you look for her, she, I believe, is 27 years old, currently ranked number 68 in the world. She does a lot of things really well for Tomjanovic. You know, 5'11", uses that length, a very good athlete, fluid athlete around the court, can produce power when in the outer thirds, and you look for her, the things she's gotten better at, her first serve win percentage has continued to improve. You know, she was 51% a few years ago. She's gotten that number up to 61, 64, 66.5% over these past few seasons. Now, her first serve percentage is not where it needs to be, and that's why she's not an elite of the elite player, because she's under 60% on average of her first serves in. That second serve does hang up at times, and that was the ball Sabalenka, as I mentioned, capitalized on in this match, was able to take control of so many points, was able to break Tomjanovic six of times on 13 attempts versus only getting broken three times on 9 different attempts, because she was just able to take control of points. She was the one more frequently moving to the net. Now, Tomjanovic did a really good job of taking her chances of win in the outer thirds, also using that space to get Sabalenka stretched and not allow her to tee off on the ball, as she's done such a good job of doing. And I actually really think Alia Tomjanovic, who struggled with injuries of late when healthy,
She's a really, really special player. I mean, you look for Tomjanovic, 4-11 is not the best in her last 52 weeks, but, you know, you go back to that 2019 season, Tomjanovic was 31-29. In 2018, she was 36-24. Injuries have played a big role in her past few seasons, but if healthy, I think she's someone who can absolutely stick around in the top 75 because she's got a lot of physical skills, and you just can't teach some of that. But the story for me, Aryna Sabalenka is a threat, and I think should win a Grand Slam title if she plays her best tennis. Now, there are a lot of other players who can play really well also, but Sabalenka's got that gear like a Naomi Osaka, and I don't say that lightly. I think Osaka's the only other woman in history other than Serena Williams to approach that best of the best all-time service status. But when she's clicking, Aryna Sabalenka, she doesn't own a home, but they let her lease whenever she wants in that neighborhood, right? They're not, you know, she's not paying the $40,000 condo fee. She doesn't come to the board meetings where they're like, hey, I think we need to renovate the gym because this equipment's getting a little old. And I love these treadmills, but you can hear the treadmill turning. And in modern day, they're anti-gravity treadmills, right? That's where the Osaka and Serena Williams serves live. And Sabalenka doesn't own yet, but they let her lease in the neighborhood, and I think she could own by the end of this season. That's the sort of skill set. That's the sort of physical talent she has. So really impressed from her second match in Abu Dhabi on Friday.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
The other performance I want to break down, Yulia Putintseva, who I just think she's just really good. Like, in terms of her floor as a player, she just does a lot of things really, really well around the court. And I know I've talked about her a bunch. She's now 19-10 in her last 52 weeks of play. You look at who the losses have come to: Halep, Brady, Sakkari, Bencic, Mertens, you know, Kudermetova, Teichmann in Lexington, and we know how good she was during that week of play. Podorowska at Roland Garros. But, I mean, Yulia Putintseva, I am a fan. I just think she, first of all, I guess we can talk about the numbers as well, and you just look at her steady progression over the past few seasons. She goes 28-24 in 2016 in tour level matches, then 23-28, 22-23, 31-15 last season, as I mentioned, 17-11. She keeps getting better at all of the little things as well. Her first serve win percentage has steadily risen from 58% to 61%. Her second serve win percentage, it's hovered around 45%, but given her size, that's not horrible. I think, you know, more importantly, something that she can hang her head on. She's gotten better and better each and every season on the return of serve as well, and it's just the skill set she brings. First of all, such a dynamic athlete. She also doesn't own and probably doesn't lease either, but she's got a friend in the Halep-Barty neighborhood in terms of her movement. And, you know, Coco Gauff, by the way, is the youngest person to ever move into that neighborhood in terms of the elite movement neighborhood. Elite Movement LLC is what they call the neighborhood. Don't ask me. I don't live there for sure, but some people do live there, and that's the word on the street. Yulia Putintseva, she's got friends in the neighborhood, so they're used to seeing her around there, and, you know, it's what she can do when on the run as well. First of all, she has no shame. She will throw a lob 35 feet in the air and just say, all right, we're back to neutral in this point, and, you know, she'll play that brand of tennis. She'll slice, she'll drop shot, she'll move forward, she'll spontaneously take a ball on the rise and early down the line. She's got a really good skill set, and look, she's never going to hit her opponent off the court, and, you know, I think if it's Sabalenka versus Putintseva, that match is on Sabalenka's racket. But Yulia Putintseva is a scrapper, and 25 years old, going to turn 26, or I think turn 26 actually on Thursday, January 7th. So happy birthday to you, Yulia, and many more returns. But I just think You know, look, in this match against Krejcikova, in Krejcikova, by the way, who's been rock solid, Krejcikova, also 25 years old, a little bit younger than me. That's always crazy to see. She's been really good of late, 21 and 9 in her last 52 weeks of singles action. She's, of course, such an accomplished doubles player already as well, but currently number 65 in the singles rankings. The things you'd like to see from her, again, how effective she's been on that first serve. She's jumped from 57% to 67%. Over the past three seasons in terms of first serve win percentage. She's gotten her first serve in percentage above that 60% number as well. She continues to get better as a returner. But Putintseva, you know, she just was never able to solve the Putintseva riddle. Putintseva threw so many different looks at her, never let Krejcikova get settled in the center of the court and dictate. And that's what I like about Putintseva, is just how uncomfortable she makes her opponents. If you have a bad day, and we all have bad days during the course of a 40-week season, all of these players do. All of these players are bound to have a bad day. You just aren't going to want to play Yulia Putintseva because she is going to make you uncomfortable. It's not quite Daniil Medvedev, but it's Medvedevian in terms of her game style. And I just think, again, you know, she had her best results of her career last season for Putintseva. You look at what she was able to do at the U.S. Open. She ends up making, I believe, the quarterfinals there, beating Martic, beating Sasnovich before losing to Jennifer Brady at the French Open. Obviously, a three-set loss to Nadia Podoroska looks much better in hindsight. But I think Yulia Putintseva is going to keep rocking and rolling during this 2021 season. I expect her to solidify her place in the top 30 because, again, she can just throw so many different looks at her opponents, and that just makes her such a dangerous out. So look forward to watching her compete throughout the rest of this season. Those are my two breakdowns from Friday's action. I want to quickly talk about everything else, give a few other notes, who impressed me, who did not on the day. I mentioned this in the earlier podcast, but Sara Cerevisiorma is just a tough out, folks. I mean, a really nice three-set win for her over Bernarda Pera. She just... great mover, nice variety with the backhand slice, very disciplined about taking balls early, just going to keep you uncomfortable the entire match. And Bernarda Pera fought and scrapped, and it's another close three-set loss for Bernarda Pera. She's had so many of them over the past 18 months, but it's a great win for Cerevisiorma. A really nice win for Paula Badosa-Gibert as well, 4-4 over Alize Cornet. Your other wins on the day in terms of the seeds who advanced, Sonia Kenin, and we haven't talked about this yet, what happened to Kirsten Flipkens, the fact that her ankle got just fractured or whatever it may be, severely sprained, just significantly damaged on one of those little court sideline banners, sponsorship banners. Why those are on the court befuddles all of us. I mean, the fact that even one player has gotten injured on it, get them out of there. There's plenty of other space in a tennis arena to sell that sponsorship to make it visible to the audience watching. So, inexcusable. Obviously, we wish Flipkens nothing but the best. We know she is in her recovery path already, but Kenin, you know, was not playing her best tennis. She just hasn't played her best tennis all week in Abu Dhabi. Nevertheless, she finds herself in the round of 16, and we'll talk about her more in a later podcast. Your other seeded winner, Ons Jabeur, escapes against Bondarenko to get to the round of 16. She was down big in the first set, actually ended up fighting back, fighting off set points, getting it 2-5 all, but ends up losing that first set 7-5. From there, she just kind of did her thing, you know, 5-7, 6-3, 6-2 for Jabeur. She's just so confident right now. And, you know, when you play with a game, a style with that much variety, right, that much spontaneity, you better be confident in your shots, because if you're going for a mid-rally backhand drop shot on the run like Ons Jabeur occasionally will do, that takes some chutzpah to try and pull off, and she's able to do it. So I just think the confidence she gained last season, it's going to stick, and she is someone who also should stick in the top 30 of the WTA rankings. You know who's going to work her way there? Veronika Kudermetova, who played a different sport than Bianca Tarotti in her 2-1 win to advance to the round of 16. Your only other winner on the day, Tamara Zidanec. Great follow-up to her Jennifer Brady victory by knocking off young Canadian Layla Fernandez 6-4, 6-4. Don't worry about it if you're a Fernandez fan. I mean, she looked great in her first round match, and again, for any 18-year-old to be winning WTA 500 matches, she's exactly where she wants to be in terms of her development curve. That was the action in Abu Dhabi. In terms of Delray Beach, Some notable results just in terms of the players, because they're all people we have spoken to here at Cracked Rackets. You know, Bjorn Fratangelo, I'm telling you, he's going to get back. Maybe not top 100, but top 120 if he can stay healthy this season. He looked so good against Jack Sock and Carey. He looked really good in Orlando as well. And lights out in Delray Beach, 2-2 win over Kevin King. He's going to take on Francis Tiafoe. We'll talk about that match in a later podcast as well. But just, again, such a high floor match to match. He does a lot of things well on the court. No overwhelming weapon, but just the more well-rounded player than Kevin King. So great to see him healthy and back on the court getting a victory. Speaking of Francis Tiafoe, he matches up well with lefties, folks. I'm telling you. And he just worked Donald Young. Again, one of them was playing checkers. The other was playing chess. Francis Tiafoe, the bigger weapons. Young couldn't do much to hurt him. This match was on Tiafoe's racket the whole time. Young played well, but 3-4 victory for Francis. Your other winners on the day, Roberto Quiroz. First, I believe, ATP level win for him, maybe second, over Noah Rubin, 6-3 for Noah. It's tough. The lack of weapons is evident, yet he's such a scrapper. Quiroz just had the biggest weapon on the court in his forehand, and it was cutting through that Delray win, so great win for him. Cam Nori just worked my boy JC Aragone. Nori was just hitting corners and not missing, and JC played well, but Nori was just a level better. Nori was so relentless with his patterns. As great as JC is in terms of his speed, Nori was there. He was anticipated everything so well, and he just neutralizes everything so well. So good win for him. Great win for Christian Harrison, who we'll talk about more later. 4-2 over Echeverry. Ditto for Daniel Gallant, 4-4 over Andre Martin. And finally, Dr. Evo, he's never going away, folks. 43 years old, still winning ATP matches. He knocks off number 7 seed Pablo Andujar in 3 sets. In Antalya, had a bunch of round of 32 matches that, again, we can't watch because there's no live stream. So just to tell you the results, Berrettini, Fognini, Demon Hour, Struff, all seeds that advanced on the day. Your other players making the round of 16, Andreev, Jeremy Chardy, who we will talk about later, Hugo Grenier, Nicola Kuhn, Dimitar Kuzmanov, and Tristan Lamassine, all advancing to the round of 16. And again, we will talk about all of those matches, break down each day's play, because there have been a lot of notable storylines, and we owe it to all of you listeners to keep you apprised on those storylines. So be sure to check out the Mini Break podcast tomorrow. We will be recapping Saturday, Sunday's action in one podcast, Monday, Tuesday's action in another podcast, so that we are all caught up on Thursday to get into Wednesday's actions, and then look ahead as Abu Dhabi, Antalya, and Delray Beach all come to a close, I believe, on Wednesday. So be on the lookout for those podcasts on your Mini Break podcast feed. And of course, we've got other podcasts coming out as well, if you want to hear the State of the Union in all things related to the college tennis world in 2021, go check out the Great Shot podcast, the greatest of all time. Zoo Tennis blog founder Colette Lewis joining me for that conversation. And of course, every day on the GSP, we make our GSP Aces of the Day. All of you can follow those, excuse me, throughout the season, as well as we continue to make those picks alongside our friends at DraftKings. And of course, if you've missed anything from our College Contender Series, Next Gen ATP 2.0 Series, our weekly preview, review previews, our deciding point episodes, all of that can be found on the website crackedrackets.com. You need the more immediate updates, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, we are at Cracked Rackets. You want to message me directly, I am at GreatShotPod. Shout out, as always, to our super producers, Max Fleeger and Daniel Westoff, for the of an editing job they do day in, day out. Shout out as well to our friends at Midwest Sports. Go to MidwestSports.com. Use that promo code CR15 to find all the best brands, all the best deals related to all things tennis. But with that in mind, for our wonderful super producers, Fleeger and Westoff, our friends at Midwest Sports, and all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, and I suppose at DraftKings as well, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. You know what we say? That's the break, and we will see you all tomorrow. Thanks, everyone.